So I'd love to start before we dive into Austin Film Festival and the morning improv stuff. I'd love to go back all the way to Chicago and Second City. What got you started in being bold enough to go out to Second City? It's such a, I mean, iconic place. I mean, it's been around, what, since 59? I mean, what made you dive into that realm, like that world?
Well, I was in college, and I was doing improv. I had, you know, all of my heroes as a kid were, had some sort of tie to the Second City or the Ramblings. So all my heroes were, you know, like Dan Aykroyd and Phil Hartman and Rob Klein and just all the actors that I've looked up to all had Second City in the background. The Ramblings, and I just decided I wanted to know what, I didn't even know what that was, but I knew that my future was there. So I did improv in college for a couple of years, and just wanted something more out of what I was doing. So I just literally packed all my stuff in a van, moved to Chicago to start Second City Club. And that's what I did.
Very cool. I've been able to see a show up there. It's such an interesting, fun building. What was it like your first time on stage? Like, do you have a memory of the first sketch, the first thing you did?
Well, when I started there, I started as a at Second City. I started as a host and a manager, and eventually worked my way up to director. I was a director of a touring company there, and a night manager and a teacher. So I never actually got to perform on the stage. I was, you know, I sat in on improv sets there. I was never like a cast member at Second City, but I did get to perform on that stage a couple times, and it was exhilarating. It's iconic, and it's definitely a very intimidating room to play. You know, I got there, it was Tina Fey was on stage and Rachel Dratch was on stage. All these amazing people, Horatio Sands was on stage. So you go and watch these guys every night and kind of learn from watching them perform. And I assistant directed a main stage show. So I get to see like the nuts and bolts of how they put their shows together. And just everything you could do at Second City behind the scenes I did. And eventually they would let me play in their improv sets after the shows.
So did that help kind of, like, who tells you, we want you to go to Amsterdam? Like, how does that process happen?
Suburb Chicago is a different company than Second City. They would come in and audition Chicago improvisers. Now they've expanded their auditions to L.A. and New York and Austin as well. But back then it was just Chicago, and they would come in about once a year, once every other year, and just hold these general auditions. I would get called back every year, but never get cast. And then one year my roommate got cast, and they were looking for an assistant director. And I was like, well, I just want to perform there, so I just sort of perform somewhere so I can eventually direct. So getting the assistant director job seemed like really prime opportunity to skip the line and just get to directing. And that's kind of where my name in the hat, and luckily my roommate was already out there for a couple months, and he kind of put in a good word, and I happened to be assistant directing the main stage at Second City at the time, so added a lot of good buzz around me, people putting good words for me, so that's how I got up to Amsterdam.
I'm kind of curious to show the difference between Second City and Boom. I've always heard that, like, Second City writes their material and then will come up with a theme, where Boom does, like, they'll start with a theme and then come up with the material. Is that kind of the main difference?
I mean, there's other main differences, but that is how, that's definitely the different approach to how they come up with their shows. Second City will write and perform previous shows from weeks and weeks and months until they figure out what the show's about, whereas Boom, Andrew, the producer, likes to think of what's going to be a huge big topic, buzzy kind of trend if it's going to happen in the next couple months or next year. He definitely wants to write towards that. So that's kind of what he creates the show about. The other difference is back when I was there, Boom had a 14-person cast, so like 5 of us playing a show every night. So it became like more like a family. There was always somebody hanging. There was always 9 of us not in the show that night to hang out with each other. And it's, it's weird. It's definitely a... Boom is such a weird place because you're in a different country, but you don't speak the actual language, but you're performing in your own language to people who kind of know English. So even our musician, who was Dutch at the time, even he saw the show every night, and he only understood about 80% of it. So I can't imagine a audience of Dutch people who have never seen the show before, only understanding. So you learn a different kind of comedy. You learn how to be more physical. You learn how to be more relational. The reference levels, the references have to kind of go out the window. You can't really like use Peter Pan peanut butter as a joke. No one's going to understand that.
So cool.
Or you're like Lenny and Squiggy. No one's going to understand what Lenny and Squiggy are. Can't barely understand who Lenny and Squiggy are anymore.
I've got to ask, like, as far as, like, shows that stand out that you've directed, I mean, online, obviously, it's brought up about the Boom Chicago Rock Stars, but what are some shows that stood out to you or memories that you've had that, like, thank God I got to lead that team?
Oh, my God. I would put my Boom cast up against any Saturday Night Live cast, any Groundlings cast, any Second City cast. I mean, I had, Ike Barinholtz and Jordan Peele and Jason Sudeikis and Kate Cannon and Liz Kukowski, like a Drysdale, Colton Dunn, just amazing, amazing people all in the same writing room. Josh Myers, Nicole Parker, I mean, they all were amazing. So any combination of them I get to see every night. So I think, and then offstage, just hanging out with them. Hanging out with those people every night was, and I forget, Seth would come by maybe 2 or 3 times a year and hang out with us. He was writing our sketches at the time, too. He was writing our corporate sketches, I should say. So he was living in the States and writing our corporate theater sketches, the ones that we'd go out and perform for businesses they would hire us for. It was really a really awesome, magical time. So, I mean, the shows, the sketches that we wrote, we were there at 9/11. We had an amazing show closer about the Weakest Link. Do you remember the Weakest Link?
Yeah, the show? Yeah.
The game show, yeah. So that was huge, especially in Europe at the time, in BBC. So we had a sketch where there's 4 countries vying to join the European Union, which was brand new at the time as well. And it was 4 contestants, and one of them was George Bush trying to get Texas into the European Union. And it killed hard until 9/11. And then the next day we realized, oh shit, no one wants to make fun of George Bush anymore. So we had to rewrite that whole sketch, which was an opus. We had to figure out how to close our show. And it was Jordan Peele came up and had this character named Uta. Was a Danish supermodel, and we figured out a way to work that character into the George Bush slot. So I think that to me was like one of the most trying times. I was there for the 2000 election as well. So there was a lot of political stuff that we were kind of tackling, mad cow disease. So really getting like a new big thing happening and having a right to it, especially 9/11. Jordan Peele and I used to go out and dressed as a Taliban for the 2 weeks after 9/11 and take questions from the audience. We had to do like a weekend update segment. And Andrew, the producer, really wanted something about 9/11 in the show. So we would dress up as a Taliban, go out there, do Cheech and Chong impressions as a Taliban, and just literally take improvised questions from the audience. And whatever they wanted to ask us, we would try to come up with an answer for.
Crazy.
I think those are some of my my bigger accomplishment was that time.
You know, we got to interview Ike last year. And
some of the best friends.
We brought up holiday food. He's a big Thanksgiving guy. So I've got to ask, since you guys spent so much time and not just Ike, but that whole cast, like Jordan and everyone, do you have any memories of just good holiday meals or fun times outside of work that was one of the memorable Thanksgivings or Christmases of my life type situation?
Thanksgiving was such a weird time because it's not a thing other than to us, right? Or Halloween was a thing other than we had a Halloween party. There's such an American concept of Halloween or Thanksgiving. I think New Year's Eve for me was very special because everybody and their mother and their dog is shooting off fireworks for 4 or 5 days before and after New Year's. So just nonstop constant fireworks in the streets. Throughout, but on actual New Year's Eve, we would go up to the roof, and there would be a 360-degree panorama of fireworks in every situation. So it's not like organizing the states where everybody in the community goes to a public lawn and we all sit and watch fireworks for half an hour, and that's the whole fireworks display. It's literally everybody has fireworks. So being up on the roof and just being able to look around our panoramic view of fireworks is beautiful and scary and fun and really feels like a celebration. And my fourth day in the country there was New Year's Eve. I moved there the day after Christmas, so I got an indoctrination by fire into what New Year's Eve is there.
It's a good way to start.
So
you moved to Austin in what, 05, 06?
December 04.
Oh, okay. What was the comedy scene like in 04 in Austin?
Well, I wasn't really cognizant of the stand-up scene, but the improv scene, there was literally 30 improvisers, and we were all in the same theater upstairs at the Hideout. And there was only Saturday nights at 8:30, at 8 and 10. There's only improv slots. And then I begged the guy who was running the theater to, can we do shows on Friday nights too? And he was like, well, I don't want people not to come on Saturday. they'll come Friday on Saturday. Please, trust me. So he did, and he programming that. And then when we did, all these other troops started to form and reform and reunite and get together, and other troops started popping up, and it really started this whole wave that now today is 5 improv theaters, 4 training centers, and more open mics than you would ever believe. And so it's really been a boom of comedy here, but I can remember when it was just barely a couple dozen of us who loved it for the sport. But there's different styles, which was great because we really made an effort, unlike most cities where there's only one theater, or if there's two theaters and they don't speak to each other now, they'll perform at the other theater. We really wanted to create a utopia where we encouraged our students to go take classes from other people and learn from other people and blend all the styles together, because there's this whole San Francisco West Coast narrative style of improv that goes to Hideout, and Cold Town is very focused on the Chicago style of heralds and emotions and character over plot. So we don't denigrate each other. We really try to encourage cross-pollination to kind of build supergroups in Austin, rather than trying to create our own silos here, which is very rare for any improv city.
I'm kind of curious, this year you got to go back to Amsterdam for, was it the 25th anniversary of Boom in Amsterdam?
Last summer in July was the 25th anniversary, and then they asked me at the end of the year to come back in February
cool.
It's a dream come true because I always wanted to go back there, spend some time there, and kind of, you know, ingratiate myself again because I didn't leave in the best circumstances originally. So getting to do that was a real big closure moment for me. Getting like vindicate myself, you know.
And I'm not mistaken, your wife got to go out there as well. It got to be kind of a...
She came out for the last week to kind of see the opening, and then we did Europe for a week just to kind of catch up. But she came out for the last week just to kind of see the show open.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
So, tell me a bit about Bigfoot the Musical before we jump into AFF.
Sure. Bigfoot the Musical was written by Amber Ruffin. Who's a Boom alumni. She's right there with Seth Meyers. And Dave Schmold of Music, who's a former Boom and Second City musician. And they collaborated with this guy named Kevin from Chicago and wrote this musical. And I wanted to get Amber to come to Austin again. She's come many times before for a festival they produced. I thought, you know, if I can get her to bring Bigfoot, maybe I can get her to come. And so I talked to her at the 25th reunion about it. She's like, oh, yes. And then when we talked about it, she was really interested in the idea of complete strangers doing it, not her and other people that she knows. So that's what we did. We cast an Austin cast and taught them this musical, and we ran it, and it was such a joyous experience. And she came and watched, and she was over the moon. She said she'd never say if you... The feeling of watching people, of writing something, and watching people, complete strangers perform it, was unlike anything she'd ever seen before. And she loved it. It was really, really good. I thought it was really good. It was very sweet and touching, and it was a lovely, lovely musical. Very funny and very satirical at the same time.
Very cool. So... Yeah. I'm glad that I got to chat with you at 9 a.m. on a Tuesday. Reason being is you're part of the morning improv for AFF that's right at 9 a.m. And it's become kind of a big deal. I mean, you already have like 60 attendees on the schedule already. What's it like coming back and coming up with material? I mean, you've been to AFF quite a bit, so what can we expect in the mornings on Friday and Saturday?
Well, it's more of a workshop. It's more an improv session to kind of get writers and anybody who kind of want to kickstart their creative juices flowing. It's hard to do that at 9 a.m. I don't know if we're going to have 60. I think more people sign up and actually show up. It's hard. People tend to like sign up for improv classes and then not show up, is my experience. So, because getting there seems to be the hardest hurdle. But once you're there, they're going to have a good time.
It's hard for them to go like, up the stairs at the Driscoll. It's too.
I mean, they sign up for it, they want to do it. And we get this at Cold Town, where I teach and perform right now. People. All the writers said that they want to take an improv class, but signing up for it is a hurdle to get over, and then showing up for it is also kind of a big hurdle for people. So once they're there, though, they tend to have an amazing transformative time, because you know improv is really not about trying to be the funniest; it's about listening and just saying anything and having it be okay, and trusting that everybody's going to say yes, that's okay. And that's hard for a lot of people. It's hard for a lot of people to not say no. It's hard for a lot of people to listen. It's hard for a lot of people to stop their thoughts while other people are talking, you know? It's hard for people just to say anything, not scared of the repercussions. You know, it's hard for people to support other people. And those are just the basic tenets of improv that sometimes takes people years to learn how to do again, because we're really good at it when we're kids. And something happens when we grow up to become a little more cynical, a little bit more not trusting, a little bit more need for control. And improv, the fundamentals of improv kind of teach us to kind of let go of some of those things that keep us closed-minded. ends up are going to be. It's just about the basics of coming up with things, building off of things, and listening to each other. It's, you know, we're only going to do a couple exercises. It's only like an hour, hour and 15 minutes. There's not a lot of time, especially if it's a group of 20, 30, 40 people. You can't do all of that at the same time. So we are going, depending on how many people there are, we'll either have everybody participate or we'll have some people participate and show other people how to do it. It's really about the building blocks of creativity and writing for yourself and building off of your own ideas. I think that's what the focus is going to be for those sessions.
How important is it to have a festival like AFF that concentrates on the writers and what you just talked about, the creative process?
Yeah, super important, especially here in Austin, where there's so many creatives and there's so many people, multidisciplinary artists who want to write and direct and create music and act and all those other things. It's really fun. I mean, you get the movies at night, but, you know, the panels during the day and the parties are great, but it's really focused on the creative process, the writers, this festival, which is awesome because you know that any other film festival, of course, it's about the films, the directors, and the actors. But for them to focus so much on the writing is amazing because that's where it all starts and that's where the ideas come from. And to be able to nurture that part of the process, I think, is very special that you don't see in any other film festival anywhere in the country.
Very cool. Well, Dave, I'll end our chat by asking, kind of similar to Ike, I asked him about food. So I'd love to know, as far as Austin, what your favorite go-to place for food. I know there's so many different types of food, obviously barbecue.
In Austin,
where do you go if you need something? I know it's a big question. It's tough.
I'm a big guy, so I like food. I work at a lot of restaurants. And I like all kinds of food. Right now, my favorite spot is at Radio Coffee on South Manshack.
There's two
food trucks. They're my first and second favorite food trucks. One is Veracruz El Natural, the best Migas taco. That's my birthday taco. I go there every birthday for that taco. And then right next to this is a place called Didi, which is amazing street Thai food. Those are my two favorite food trucks. So to be able to go there and get Didi and Veracruz at the same time is a very special place.
I'm so glad you brought up BB. I love BB, and I'm a big East Side Kings guy, so I love late night Thai. So awesome choices. Very cool, Dave. Thanks so much for the interview, and I hope more than 20 people show up at the improv for you on Friday and Saturday.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, buddy. Have a good night.
You too.